Welcome to No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. We promise to inspire, challenge, and make you think beyond the ordinary, reaching for a life lived for love alone. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and tell your friends to join us every Saturday night at 5:30 and Sunday morning at 9:30 Central Standard Time. And now, here's my husband, Bishop Randy Dean.
Good day to everybody out there. This is Bishop Randy Dean. Thank you for the honor of your time. I never take it for granted, never going to assume that you just come here because you have to. You come here because you want to, and that is meaningful to me. I am No BS Bishop, Alive to Love, bringing you what I know and what I can about the subject of love and how the subject of love overcomes, trumps, and puts underneath us any BS that we would otherwise try to live in life. I believe that if we are focused on love, it will eliminate the potential of BS, whether it's in our speech, our attitudes, our lifestyle, our potential in the future. Stay alive to love. Stay alive to love. And that will throw away all of the extracurricular stuff that really didn't matter anyway, because love will define the rest of you if you will allow love to be the highest value of that for which you are alive. Deuteronomy 6, Moses, the founder of Judaism, as it were, the grandpappy of it all when it comes to real theology and doctrine for the Judeo-Christian system of thinking. He said himself, it was that most profound of all of his writings. And by the way, he was a prolific writer without a computer. Imagine that. Just a heart to listen to God. He said in Deuteronomy 6, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one God, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your might and all your strength, and your neighbor as yourself." That's known amongst people of the Jewish faith as the Shema. I'm not sure if that's the right pronunciation. It's S-H-E-M-A, Shema, Shema. I've heard it all kinds of ways, but whatever it is the foundation of the Jewish faith, and it's the foundation of Christian faith. It's the foundation of how we are being asked to live our life. Hear, O Israel. The word Israel really means people want to be governed by God. If you want to be a person that is known as a spiritual being, well, then hear this. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Jesus got hit with the same proposition about loving the Lord and what was the most important of all the commandments. But interestingly enough, when he got hit with that, let's see, that was in Mark chapter 12. He was in the middle of a test, a group of people, the Sadducees, folks that in my education, some old crusty professor said to our class one time, they were Sadducees. They didn't believe in life after death. They didn't believe in eternal life. So they were sad, you see. So that's how I remember that. They had a very limited view of eternity, limited view of the spiritual life of a human being. The Sadducees were fussing at Jesus. What about this? And one of the things that the Sadducees were doing in Mark 12 with Jesus was something that still goes on today. People jump into these propositional questions, these questions that really aren't connected to a real life issue in terms of, you know, person A and person B. They're just they're supposition. Well, what about what and if and maybe and so if you ever heard of. So they said, well, what about a person who dies and leaves his wife, and who should marry her and who should care for her? You know, it's that whole thing. You can read it in Mark 12. I don't want to break it down too much because it would infer in terms of the actual verses, because I know you can read and I'm challenging you to do so. And they said, well, Jesus, what about this? And so they were trying to catch him in his words. They just had a propositional question. It had no connection to a specific real need. It was just their way of kibitzing and fussing and trying to create a problem. Well, in the background, somebody came along, heard the commotion, and said, "Hey, Jesus, so what is all of this? What's the greatest commandment of all? What's the one that's the most foremost?" And then Jesus turns, in my mind and imagination, he turns, looks at them, I think, with a Mona Lisa kind of smile. And he says, "Ah, Now we're on to a real challenge and a real question about real life. And Jesus answered and said, the foremost of all the commandments. I mean, never mind about all the splitting hairs about other things. Here's the foremost. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. If you would just allow me the privilege, I would suggest that here's what Jesus is saying. Love God with everything you got, and all the rest is just BS. Just love God and love your neighbor, and everything else will fall into line. And if you want to split hairs about everything else without crossing that starting line, well, I'm sorry, then we're just going to get into a whole lot of BS. That's why I'm carrying this message here. I know some people wonder about me, and you know, you're in good company. I'm 66. There have been a lot of people through my life that wonder about me, but you don't have to wonder about one thing from Randy Dean, and that is this. I am a lover of God, and I'm a lover of people. There you have it. I love God. I love people. I don't do it perfectly. Far from it. I'm reaching for that. I tell people all the time that if you'll lean toward something that's a high priority, just keep leaning. Well, it's kind of like leaning forward physically. After a while, gravity will take hold of you and pull you in. So I'm leaning. I'm leaning hard. And I may fall while I'm leaning, but at least I'm leaning toward the high value, the foremost, the Shema, the hear, O Israel, hear, O people of God. There's one priority, and it's unlike anything else. It's the one thing. Do this. Everything else will cease to be BS, and everything else will start to fall into line. I want to give you what I feel today are the three transcendencies, the three ascendancies. I'm not sure whether to land on ascendancy or transcendency, but I hope you get my drift. The three values that come up out of life when you will live by that foremost, that one high goal, reaching for the highest fruit at the top of the tree, as it were, rather than just picking the low fruit down below. You know, I really do believe far too many of us, of people of faith, we're just always reaching for the fruit that's lowest on the tree, the easiest ones to pick. You know, like, well, you should be a good person. Well, of course we should be a good person, but is that the highest goal? Well, we shouldn't be going around sinning. Well, of course not, because sinning, the word sin means miss the mark. You know, if I'm target shooting, one thing I want to do is hit the bullseye. That's an easy one. That's low fruit. Well, we should be people who are in favor of righteousness. I agree with that too, but then what about one person's definition of righteousness and your definition of righteousness? And there's a whole lot of definitions of righteousness. And there's a whole lot of people that are out there fussing and fuming and arguing, kind of like the Sadducees with Jesus in Mark chapter 12. Well, what about and what about? What's righteous? What's the right thing? Well, how do you do this? And what? Well, you know what? Those are conversations about what's right and who's right. Those conversations go on ad nauseum. And again, if you'll bear with me, a lot of those conversations, all they land into is a whole lot of BS. But I'm here to tell you that there's one conversation we ought to all be having, and that is, how do I live the transcendency, the ascendancy of being a lover of God and a lover of people? You know, there it is. If you, I think it was Augustine, one of the great church fathers, said, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then do whatever you please after that. I like that. I've always loved that. Just love God. Just give everything you got to love God. And then everything else, all the other hair splitting, all the other doctrinal arguments, all the other questions about how other people are living their life and if it's right or if it's wrong. No. Those are questions without an answer that never get resolved, especially when, like in Mark chapter 12, we're just all fighting and fussing about it. But Jesus answers that one question, what's the foremost? And the foremost is love God with everything you got and your neighbor as yourself. the simplicity of love. Now, I want you to hear a very straightforward statement. How do we rise? How do we rise? How do we ascend to this being alive to love? The simplicity of love is found in the sheer impossibility of it. As soon as we think we've got a grasp on love, we will discover that the passionate nature of love is going to immediately outgrow our hold. And in the race to grasp love, it'll always draw us forward. It'll keep pulling us out. As I said a few moments ago, we'll just have to keep leaning if love is our goal. It'll just keep drawing us forward. But here's the simple truth of that. We cannot live without loving. We can't live without loving, and we can't live without being loved, even as it's impossibly challenging us at every turn. I know most of you listening to me have discovered that. I can't live without love. If it wasn't for love, where would country music be? For the challenge of love, for that matter, any style of music, where would music have to really commiserate about the struggle, the pain, the up, the down, the outreaching it, and all of that? Music, all of art really has some root in this whole angst and the pathos of the human condition about love. What is love? But a secondhand emotion, somebody once sang. I think you get my point. Simplicity of love is found in the sheer impossibility of it. That's really true. So we have to, if we recognize something's impossible, and I do, but I also believe that impossible is one of those principles, one of those philosophies of life, that it either pushes you back and causes you to give up. And I hope you understand me in the heart that I carry. There's nothing in me about giving up. If something's impossible, it'll either push you back and make you want to give up, or impossible will say, we're going to do that, and we're going to do the impossible. We're going to do the impossible well. Yeah, we're going to do the impossible, and we're going to do it stinking good. When they asked somebody one time, why do you climb that mountain? It's treacherous. You could die. Why do you climb the mountain? Some of you are already answering the question. Why do I climb the mountain? Because it's there. We are, every one of us in this life, to do the impossible. Now, again, the impossible for one day or one person may be entirely different than the impossible of the next day or another person. But we're, every one of us, reaching past the dreariness, the brown paper bag existence of just doing what's possible, just doing what, I guess I can do that. Listen, love is impossible. Love is impossibly challenging. Love is impossibly drawing us out. So I told you I wanted to give you three principles of the transcendency, the ascendancy of love. And that first one is this: it's impossible. But when we look at something impossible, we have to make a critical life choice. Am I here to do just what is simple and easy, or am I here to do the impossible? There was a general in World War II who was challenging the military complex of our day here in America, who recognized that there was only one way we were going to win World War II, and that was to do amphibious landings. And of course, we all know the granddaddy of them all in terms of amphibious landings is the D-Day landing. When we crossed the English Channel, when the Allies made it across the English Channel and then invaded France in order to take France back from the Nazis. Well, that was only one, however, of many amphibious landings. World War One, however, let's step back a minute. World War One, however, had some terrible examples of how impossible amphibious landings were for the military. There were some critical defeats when it came to amphibious landings. I hope you all know what that is. It's coming in off of ships and sending tens of thousands of soldiers and machinery to a shoreline to invade a particular piece of geography. Well, Mad Dog Smith, a general in the military complex of the United States, was one of the strategists as to how we were going to win World War II. And he was convinced that we were going to have to do multiple amphibious landings throughout the world, and whether it was the Pacific front or the European front in World War II. And somebody told him. Somebody who shouldn't have spoken up did, because they were made a fool of. The somebody said to Mad Dog Smith, "It is impossible. We can't do amphibious landings. They're failed. They have been a failure." And Mad Dog Smith answered by saying, "Well, then we're going to do the impossible, and we're going to do the impossible well." That, in itself, is an entire study of human nature. We're going to do what we can't do, and we're going to do it well. So the first principle of transcendency of love and ascendancy of love is to acknowledge it's impossible, but you have got to decide somewhere in the deepest core of your life, I'm going to do the impossible, and I'm going to do it well. I'm going to be a lover of God and a lover of people. There is no other way I want to live my life. We cannot live without loving or being loved, even as it is impossibly challenging at every turn. So that's the first point of transcendency and ascendancy of love. The next thing about Jesus' statement that's from Moses, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord, and you shall love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbors yourself." The second principle of that transcendency and ascendancy of it is that love is the only thing worth everything. Only thing worth everything. It is the one attitude of life and the one way of doing life that causes each and every one of us to rise rather than just stay static or fall deeper and deeper into sadness or failure. And failure is only final when we decide that's where I'm just going to live. Love's the only thing worth everything. When you read through all of poetic literature, when you read through all of the history of the arts, when you read through anything that expresses the human condition in terms of what people are willing to die for, what people are willing to sacrifice everything they have for, there is one theme that categorizes all of that, and that is, you guessed it, love. It's the only thing worth everything. So in ascending, in transcending the norms, I would challenge you to look at what Jesus said. Look at what Moses said. "Hear, O Israel, you will love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength." This is what is worth everything. It's worth everything in this life. It's worth being misunderstood. It's worth being left in a world of being marginalized by others who say, "Oh, he's just one of those. He's just one of those impossibility thinkers. He's just one of those people that thinks you should do the impossible." It's worth it. It's worth being misunderstood to be a person of one true passion, and that is love. It's the only thing worth everything. I understand, and I have shared my story little bits and pieces here, that I understand that there's a whole trainload of dysfunction in human existence. And, you know, it's one thing to see the human condition from afar and recognize there is a trainload of dysfunction. But it's another thing to grow up in the hotbed of it. And I grew up in a hotbed of dysfunction. I don't want to elaborate it here, but it had a lot to do with chemical dependency in my home. It was just my mom, my dad, my brother, and I. And the chemical dependency that was in that home was a trap and a pressure cooker that ate up a whole chunks of our existence. I'll just leave it at that. What I learned from that is that when I had to make a choice about whether I was going to stay in that circumference of dysfunction or come out of it, I had to ask myself, am I ready to give everything I've got to get out of this? And it was, for me, it really was an all or nothing question. You know, I had to recognize, you know, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous recognizes and calls us to recognize that I am powerless. I'm powerless over something that is seeking to control my life. And that I have to turn my life over the care and to the nurture and to the reality of a God a God who is more powerful than all of my powerlessness. And it becomes, again, then I'm trying to help you see that it's a question of, is this worth everything? And I'm saying to you, it is worth everything. Love is the only thing worth everything. And by that I mean, when you live in dysfunction or you see people who are dysfunctional and broken, love is a choice that will call you to spend everything in your life to rise above it. Doesn't mean that I affirm people who are brutal or angry or dysfunctional or addicted or causing pain for other people. Doesn't mean that I just look the other way and pretend it doesn't exist. No. It means that I look at it for what it is, and I make the quality decision that I'm going to ascend above it. I'm going to transcend it and be a lover anyway. I'm going to be a lover anyway. And that costs me everything. It costs me my bitterness. It'll cost me my blame and shame. It'll cost me the luxury of pointing my finger at the problem instead of pointing my finger forward at rising above it. So there's another principle of transcendency and ascendancy. And last but not least, the principle of love that is calls me to ascend. It calls me to rise above. It calls me to be a person beyond what I've been before. And it is this. I have seen far too much of, whether it be the church or spiritual life or the faith values, that have been spent on lesser things. They've been spent on political pursuits. They've been spent on creating an us versus them kind of culture, looking at people as objects of my disagreement. Well, those people, you know how they are. But we know the truth. I mean, we don't quite say it that explicitly, but oh baby, we sure live it that explicitly. We have to decide that anything less than all in for love, all my chips are in the middle of the table for love. I'm not going to live any BS about it. I'm not going to live any pretense about it. I'm not going to try to act like I'm a lover when in reality I'm not. We have to ascend and transcend all other temptations and throw all that we have, all in for love, all in, all day, every day for love, all in, every day, all in, all day, every day, all in, all day, every day for love. You say it's impossible, and I'm not going to argue with you. It is, but just as it is impossible, it calls me to live beyond the brown paper bag existence of accepting possibilities instead of impossibilities as the challenge of my life. Well, if you've listened to this broadcast any at all over the last month or so, and by the way, I'm a newcomer here. I'm a rookie at this broadcast business in terms of putting this out week in and week out. And I got to tell you, I'm enjoying this. I'm loving being able to share with you on the being a no BS bishop and being alive to love. If you've heard me at all, you know that I love quotes, and I've got one solid quote for you today to wrap this particular broadcast up. And it's again from one of my favorite of all preachers, one of my favorite of all Christian preachers in my life, and that is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Listen to this quote. It's a little lengthy, but listen carefully. He said, "I've seen too much hate to want to hate myself, and every time I see it, I say to myself, hate is too great a burden to bear. Somehow we must be able to stand up against our most bitter opponents and say, we will match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We will meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we will still love you." Impossible, you say. Yes. "We cannot in all good conscience, however, obey your unjust laws and abide by an unjust system, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as cooperation with good. So throw us in jail, and we will still love you. Bomb our homes and threaten our children, and, as difficult as it is, we will still love you. Send your hooded perpetrators of violence and hate into our communities at the midnight hour, and drag us out on some wayside road and leave us half dead as you beat us, and we will still love you." Hoo, hoo, hoo. Send your propaganda agents around the country and make it appear that we are not fit culturally or otherwise for integration, but will still love you. Be assured, we'll wear you down by our capacity to suffer. And one day we will win our freedom. We will not only win freedom for ourselves, we will appeal to your heart and conscience that we will win you in the process. And then, now listen, and then our victory will be a double victory. Wow! Dr. Martin Luther King just laid it down for us. Ascend from all the suffering. Transcend it. Rise above this misery of violence and hate, and be this one kind of person. Hear, O Israel. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your strength, and your neighbors yourself. Right there. That's all the law. That's all the prophets. Right there. Jesus said, you know, I got these moralistic religious leaders called the Sadducees trying to fight and fuss and trap me with their questions about if somebody dies, who gets his wife? Oh, my God. I mean, seriously, Mark 12 is really all about that kind of nonsense. And Jesus is in the middle of their fuss when he's confronted by somebody from the outside who looks in on all the fuss. And the guy says, tell me. What's the foremost amongst all this? In the middle of all this BS, Jesus, what really matters? And Jesus spun around and said, ah, there's the real question. And he said, hear, O Israel, from Deuteronomy 6, Jesus quotes, hear, O Israel, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbors yourself. And right there is where everything, the law, the prophets, our church religious practices, all our stuff that can otherwise devolve into BS, all of that can ascend, transcend the normal questions of us against them and say, no matter who, no matter what, no matter when, we will love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. There you have it today, folks. So pleased that you gave me the honor of your time. I never take it for granted. I'm Randy Dean. I call myself the No BS Bishop because I'm alive not for BS. I'm alive to love. I'm going to stay alive to love while there's breath in my lungs and my heart is beating. I am alive to love. I'm asking you to join me in this adventure of the impossibility of love, love, love. Happy trails, everybody.
Thank you for being with us today for this episode of No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. Be sure to join us again here next week, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. Feel free to contact us with your questions or comments at randydeanministries@gmail.com, and we welcome your financial support at paypal.me/randydeanministries. No BS Bishop is a service of WPCA Radio and Randy Dean Ministries.